The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Patricia for the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next hour, I will be reading to you from Time Magazine. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com. That is gsuggsinsurance.com, or call 919-875-8889. That's 919-875-8889. Today's edition of Time Magazine is dated December 25, 2023. As usual, the front cover is bordered in red with a narrow white inner border. No More Time thumbprints up here at the top right-hand corner. We've apparently expired the 100th year notification. Time, though, is still in large capital block lettering in a soft gray superimposed upon a slightly darker, medium dark, slate gray background. Person of the Year is depicted on the cover. It's a glamour shot of a young woman, her head and her neck. She has blondish brown hair, very wavy, very long, very loosely styled. She has bright blue eyes, and she's looking upward from the camera lens, bright red lips, a couple of very small diamond-looking earrings, wearing a white turtleneck, and on top of that we see a tan-colored jacket, probably leather, with a lighter beige-colored corduroy collar. It is Taylor Swift. And there are lots of articles about Taylor Swift, one of which I will read, and possibly abridge, because they're very lengthy. But we'll find out about Taylor Swift. There's a Time Athlete of the Year noted here, a full-page headshot of this person, and it's framed in red and white, as is the cover photo. This is soccer great Lionel Messi, M-E-S-S-I. On the back of his shirt is a number 10. It shows a profile view of him kicking, and his uniform is rose-colored and black. And then there's also a Time CEO of the Year, also in the same format as the cover photo. And this is OpenAI leader Sam Altman, another young person wearing a tan sweater with short-cropped tan hair. I forgot to tell you, Lionel Messi has dark hair, short dark hair, and short dark facial hair. And Sam Altman is pictured against a dark green background. Beginning here, 2023, the year in politics. Time seems to have categorized everything in this issue in terms of 2023. First of all, there's a half-page photo. We see the backs and profiles of, six people. The back of the most prominent is a kind of blondish haircut or hair color, hairstyle, and the person's wearing a dark blue jacket, and it's probably former President Trump, because the caption reads, "Trump's court dates are filling up his 2024 campaign calendar." This group of persons is entering a room that says Room 300, very tall, dark wood doors, the Honorable Paul G. Feinman ceremonial courtroom. Donald Trump, the GOP frontrunner, kept his eyes on the Oval Office, even as the court cases mounted, by Brian Bennett. Some former presidents retreat to privacy, after the pressures of the job, Exhibit A, George Washington. Others find a way to stay in the spotlight, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter. Then there's Donald Trump, who remained the front runner for the Republican presidential nomination throughout 2023, as his pileup of legal woes led pundits and reporters to wear out the word unprecedented. Before Trump's 91 charges over four indictments, no former U.S. president has ever been indicted, even once. The first indictment came in March from New York, tied to his trying to cover up an affair with an adult film actress. Then came federal charges in June over classified documents, and charges in August in federal court and in Georgia over his efforts to overturn his 2020 election loss. The cases will shape 2024 campaigns and test the justice and political system unlike anything the country has ever seen. In the meantime, they're playing into Trump's framing of himself as a perpetual victim of political retaliation. The first charges made headlines but may be hard to prove. The Manhattan District Attorney's case hinges on an untested legal theory that the former president could be charged in New York for falsifying business records to cover up state election law violations and exceeding federal tax contribution limits. Special Counsel Jack Smith's cases, by contrast, look serious. He filed the first federal charges against Trump over classified documents he took to his Mar-a-Lago home after the end of his presidency. Smith followed that with charges Trump conspired to subvert American democracy and that the rioters who assaulted police officers and broke into the Capitol January 6, 2021, were acting at Trump's direction. The attacks were the culmination of Trump's criminal conspiracies to overturn the legitimate results of the presidential election, Smith wrote in recent court filings. Yet the most persistent legal threat Trump faces may be in Georgia, where Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis says Trump was at the center of a broad conspiracy to reverse election results in that state. The case is outside the purview of the federal government, so it will continue even if he is elected president and is able to shut down federal cases against him. The evidence in Georgia seems intuitive. Trump's on tape asking the Secretary of State to find him votes to win, and several people who were directly in touch with Trump have flipped and are cooperating with prosecutors. Trump's trials are filling up his 2024 calendar, competing with key moments for his presidential campaign. In January, as the Iowa caucuses kick off, he faces a civil trial over defaming writer E. Jean Carroll a second time, when he denied raping her in the 1990s, and a class action lawsuit accusing Trump and his company of a pyramid scheme. In March, Trump's federal trial over January 6 is scheduled to start a day before the Super Tuesday primaries. The New York State hush money case is set to begin later that month, and Trump's classified documents case has court dates scheduled for May. Georgia prosecutors may launch Trump's trial there in early August. Trump previewed the belligerent tone he's likely to take with his criminal trials when he took the stand in November in a civil fraud trial that threatens to dismantle the Manhattan real estate empire he built his name on. In that case, Trump admitted under oath he had adjusted the valuations of some of his properties, and that he was involved in reviewing the Trump Organization's annual reports. But he also had to be repeatedly scolded and reined in by the judge as he ignored questions, made exaggerated claims, and hurled insults at his adversaries, including New York Attorney General Letitia James, whom he called a political hack. Trump's strong standing in the Republican Party never wavered as he surrendered in arraignment after arraignment this year. Yet the outcome of those cases could have an outsized impact on the outcome in November. While recent polls show Trump leading Joe Biden in a general election matchup, some also find a significant number of Trump-leaning voters open to backing Biden if Trump is convicted. All of that adds up to a major test for American democracy, one that the justice and political systems were not designed to handle. Trump is already telling the country he will use the Justice Department to punish his political enemies if he returns to the White House. If I happen to be president and I see somebody who's doing well and beating me very badly, I say, go down and indict them, Trump recently told Univision. By charging him in court, Trump said, they've released the genie out of the box. Joe Biden. The White House struggled with public opinion even in its moments of success, by Philip Elliott. If you can put politics aside, Joe Biden had a good year as presidencies go. He held together a global coalition backing Ukraine's defense against Russia. His early legislative wins started paying off in jobs and investments in infrastructure and manufacturing. The economy even hummed along, sidestepping a recession many thought was inevitable. Not to mention, the government remained open and solvent. No small thing these days. Yet none of that appears to be helping Biden in the polls. He's heading into 2024 with worse polling than any president since Jimmy Carter at this point in his first term. Even George H.W. Bush's job approval in November 1991 was 20 points better, and he went on to lose re-election by a whopping 202 electoral votes. The polling speaks of more than disapproval, with 48% of Democrats believing Biden lacks the stamina to do the job, up from 31% when he ran last time, and 32% saying he does not make them proud as president, and those folks are supposed to be his base. Somehow Biden remains competitive in head-to-head polling against the Republican front-runner Donald Trump. Democrats may be looking around the corner for someone fresher, or at least not turning 82 just before the next inauguration day. But Biden remains perhaps the most unifying figure on their bench and a powerful check against a volatile GOP-controlled House, struggling to accomplish even basic tasks. Moreover, in the first post-Roe presidential election, Biden's support for abortion rights helps him with voters who ranked that as their top worry. As his re-election bid ramps up in 2024, Biden will face new headwinds. The House's lagging impeachment inquiry is likely to move ahead, with Republicans convinced they will turn up evidence of foreign bribery. And the legal woes of his son Hunter remain vexing, as do third-party challengers who seem to be multiplying, which is why so many in the West Wing find themselves taking comfort in the old adage, polls don't vote, people do. Sometimes, it seems, old is what you want. 2023, the year in medicine. Drugs for obesity, Alzheimer's, and infectious diseases herald a new era of innovation in the pharma business, by Alice Park. It has been a while since the pharmaceutical industry last saw a year like 2023, when the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approved a slew of groundbreaking and life-changing medications that represent a surge in innovation and a potential boon to the drug makers' bottom lines. Eisai and Biogen kicked off the year with the approval of lecanemab, Leqembi, for Alzheimer's disease, which is the second medication designed to treat the root causes of the memory-robbing condition, but appears to be the most effective. GSK and Pfizer dropped the first-ever vaccines for RSV in adults, giving older and pregnant people a way to protect themselves, and in the case of expectant mothers, their newborns as well, from a potentially deadly respiratory disease. Biogen and Sage Therapeutics received approval for a first-ever oral treatment for postpartum depression, zuranolone, Zurzuvae, and the FDA also allowed biotech companies Intellia Therapeutics and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals to start late-stage testing of the first gene-editing treatment using CRISPR technology inside patients. And the escalating demand for a new group of weight loss drugs will only continue to explode with the approval of Eli Lilly's tirzepatide, Zepbound, which appears to trigger the most weight loss of any medication to date. I would categorize the past year as a little above average on the innovation cycle, says Damian Conover, director of equity strategy at Morningstar, an equity research firm. While there is no single driver explaining the spate of approvals, many of these drugs represent a continuing trend toward biologic-based medicines, which involve cellular or gene-oriented strategies, like the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, that tend to address the basic mechanisms that cause disease. In comparison, small molecule drugs, the foundation of medicinal chemistry that built the pharmaceutical industry and remains an important platform as well, rely on testing a variety of chemicals to find ones that have the right reaction that can address symptoms or disease. The biologic approach can change a lot of what were lifetime diseases to something that is not a lifetime disease, or is not a disease at all, says Dave Ricks, CEO of Eli Lilly. Even policymakers in the U.S. have recognized the potential of biologics, incentivizing their development with the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, which gives drug makers more time to maintain their initial prices of biologic-based drugs, compared with small molecules, before they're required to enter price negotiations with Medicare. There is another trend represented by the new drugs, a continued shift toward prevention and getting earlier in the patient experience, says GSK CEO Emma Walmsley. That's a great leap forward. But doing so means pricing for these drugs needs to transform as well. High upfront and potentially one-time costs are currently a barrier to some patients, since insurance companies and employers are reluctant to cover them. That's because for chronic conditions like Alzheimer's or obesity, the current reimbursement system is built on paying for treatments on an episodic rather than single-dose therapy model that could essentially treat the disease and limit additional health care costs. The dynamism of the payment system is still really slow, says Ricks. Those problems are as present as ever and seem to be growing, with even more pressure to fix payment issues to find a better way to help people afford care that saves the system money and is deemed fair to society and creates enough incentive for innovator companies that create new breakthroughs to want to do it again. 2023, the year in relationships. Plumbing the mystery of why some fan-favorite famous couples called it quits after decades, by Belinda Luscombe. There are some thumbprint photographs here, and they're really not substantially recognizable, so perhaps this article will address it. The conventional view of marriage holds that its satisfaction levels are U-shaped. There's a hyped-up romantic part at the start, then a decline as people come to terms with the fact that life with another person is only sometimes an escalator to the upper reaches of happiness and more of an iditarod to a less hostile locale. And then, slowly, satisfaction returns, either because people have made peace with their lot or because they've negotiated their way to a more perfect union. But if 2023's catalog of prominent marital events suggests anything, it is that a long marriage is not always a forever marriage, especially if it's between two famous, driven people. This year saw some newsworthy clear-cutting in the old-growth forest of celebrity couples, as unions, oft cited as hashtag couples goals, crashed to earth. In September, Hugh Jackman and Deborah Lee Furness, one of VIP coupledom's sturdiest trees, announced they were separating after 27 years. In October, Jada Pinkett Smith revealed she and Will Smith had been separated for 7 years, a full quarter of their marriage. Then Meryl Streep's PR person let it drop that Streep and her husband, the sculptor Don Gummer, married 45 years, had been living apart for 6. And let's not forget that 2023 was when Kellyanne and George Conway called it quits, after more than 2 decades, though what shocked most people was how long they lasted. Leaving a spouse after a quarter century seems like madness to some, like learning Chinese and then moving to Mexico. Other folks see the sense in it. With no kids to raise, there's less of a joint project. Spouses find it hard to surprise each other, and their stories, habits, and chewing noises can wear thin. And what with delivery apps, Wordle, OnlyFans, long life light bulbs, home security systems, Medicare, Uber, and so much online content, the benefits of growing old together, in many people's judgment, do not outweigh the drawbacks. It is also possible to see these sundown splits as a sign of hope. They demonstrate an unwillingness to settle, a refusal to make do with whatever career, health situation, or life partner rolled your way. Exiting a marriage after so many years could be a sign to the great cosmic busboy that no, you are not done yet, change is still possible, you could manage another course. This has been another theme of 2023. Madonna, 64, is on tour. Barbara Streisand and Martha Stewart, each 81, appeared on magazine covers, the latter showing off a rack of the non-culinary kind. Annette Bening, 65, is in a biopic about Diana Nyad, who swam 110 miles to Miami from Cuba at 64. And The Golden Bachelor, about a widower looking for a new spouse in his 70s, was a ratings success. The elders are not going quietly. They are raging against the dying of their cultural force and their romantic dreams. The search for new love is an eternally compelling fantasy, but as the Golden Bachelor, Gary Turner, discovered, even when candidates are deposited at your doorstep, finding a new mate can be a nightmare. Turning over a new leaf with someone whose flaws you know will probably not lead to a dazzling springtime of new experiences, but there is something to be said for a spectacular autumn. So it may be time to send positive thoughts the way of your favorite celebrity couple. How are Kira Sedgwick and Kevin Bacon doing? Anyone heard from Angela Bassett and Courtney B. Vance? Could someone send Rita Wilson and Tom Hanks a Groupon for a date night? If 2023 is any guide, you can never be too careful. turning now to the cover story about Taylor Swift, and here is a two-page photo layout in black and white and grays. Person of the Year, Taylor Swift. She's wearing the same hairstyle as on the cover. Remember, this is black and white, though. She's wearing the same delicate, expensive-looking earrings. She is looking at the camera lens. She is wearing a different outfit that supposedly looks like a takeoff on jeans and a tuxedo jacket, a tuxedo vest or a waistcoat, and a tuxedo shirt. And there's no other caption, but it's two pages of that on black and white. This is a lengthy article. Well, actually, this is only two pages, so here we go. Followed by an abridged version of the second, more lengthy article, The Choice by Sam Jacobs, editor-in-chief. Since 1927, Time has chosen a person of the year. The editor's assessment of the individual who most shaped the headlines over the previous 12 months, for better or for worse. As a tradition, Person of the Year springs from the great man theory of history, a belief that individuals have the power to transform society. The selections over the years have tended to follow certain patterns. The person chosen has typically been a ruler over traditional domains of power. He, and yes, usually it has been a he, is very often a politician or a titan of industry. 14 U.S. presidents, 5 leaders of Russia or the Soviet Union, 3 popes have all been recognized. And yet the person whose singular influence was revealed throughout 2023 has held none of these roles or anything remotely similar. Every year contains light and dark. 2023 was a year with significant shares of darkness. In a divided world where too many institutions are failing, Taylor Swift found a way to transcend borders and to be a source of light. No one else on the planet today can move so many people so well. Achieving this feat is something we often chalk up to the alignments of planets and fates. But giving too much credit to the stars ignores her skill and her power. Swift is the rare person who is both the writer and hero of her own story. Her path is untraveled, something she's known for some time. I can't find anyone, really, who's had the same career trajectory as mine, Swift told us in 2014, when she first appeared on the cover of Time, upon releasing her 5th album, 1989. So when I'm in an optimistic place, I hope my life won't match anyone else's life trajectory either. While her popularity has grown across the decades, this is the year Swift, 33, achieved a kind of nuclear fusion, shooting art and commerce together to release an energy of historic force. She did it by embracing what she does better than anyone, entertaining and writing songs that connect with people. Now she becomes the first person of the year to be recognized for her success in the arts. In a year when we were reawakened to questions about who makes and who owns our cultural expressions, Swift is also a symbol of generational change. She is only the 4th solo person of the year born in the past half century. In the 17 years since her debut, Swift has notched more number one albums than any other woman in history. This year alone, she had 3. She was everywhere in 2023, filling stadiums and breaking records, which meant we were forced to find novel ways to measure the magnitude of her reach. Seismograms were deployed to show the literal impact caused by her fans. As Swift reportedly became a billionaire, countries' gross domestic products became the yardstick for her financial contributions. University classes to study Swift's lessons in literature, business, and law were announced. Swift was showered with keys to cities, and street signs changed to her name. In 2023, world leaders and mayors competed to bring her monumentally successful Eras Tour to their jurisdictions. Swift has become a feature of American soft power. A U.S. diplomat told me how meaningful it was to get Swift to agree to play in his host country. And Swift, as we now know, has had a Midas touch, improving the fortunes of every place she visits and business she celebrates. Just ask the NFL about its millions of new fans, or your Secretary of State. Tens of thousands of fans registered to vote after she encouraged them on Instagram, spiking visits to vote.org. She has done a great job of sticking to her guns and being vocal and political in the ways that she wants to, says the Chicks frontwoman, Natalie Maines. At the same time, much of what Swift accomplished in 2023 exists beyond measurement. She mapped her journey and shared the results with the world. She committed to validating the dreams, feelings, and experiences of people, especially women, who felt overlooked and regularly underestimated. They know she respects her audience and trusts them with her story. She held up a mirror to her own life, helping people better see themselves. She embraced her past, foibles and all, and in doing so encouraged others to do the same. While Swift's success can feel like a counterweight to traditional forms of power, the secret to her mastery has ancient roots. She is writing her own myth, informed by her own journey. And it has been an epic. So many have turned to those tales because they've been so disappointed by the storylines that emerge elsewhere in society. Any student of that great man theory of history knows how deeply intertwined it is with centuries of sexism and the exclusion of women from power. Indeed, this is not the first time Swift has been part of Time Person of the Year. In 2017, she was among the silence breakers we recognized for standing up and speaking out against discrimination, harassment, and assault faced by too many women for far too long. Swift has been both avatar and author of shifting narratives, never more so than in 2023. Where do they take us? It might look something like what Swift has created, making a space for 70,000 people night after night to experience joy together. What is a higher form of influence, after all, than giving millions of fans, young and old, the time of their lives where they can revel not only in Swift's voice but in finding their own? These moments were all the more magical for taking place as we exited a pandemic, rediscovering the communal experiences that were so recently taken from us, for building a world of her own that made a place for so many, for spinning her story into a global legend, for bringing joy to a society desperately in need of it. Taylor Swift is Time's 2023 Person of the Year. Here's a small addendum, which is, after all, a very much abbreviated, large column. The Poet Laureate of Pop Culture, Taylor Swift, by Sam Lansky. Taylor Swift is telling me a story, and when Taylor Swift tells you a story, you listen, because you know it's going to be good, not only because she's had an extraordinary life, but because she is an extraordinary storyteller. This one's about a time she got her heart broken, although not in the way you might expect. She was 17, she says, and she had booked the biggest opportunity of her life so far, a highly coveted slot opening for country superstar Kenny Chesney on tour. This was going to change my career, she remembers. I was so excited. But a couple weeks later, Swift arrived home to find her mother, Andrea, sitting on the front steps of their house. She was weeping, Swift says. Her head was in her hands, as if there had been a family emergency. Through sobs, Andrea told her daughter that Chesney's tour had been sponsored by a beer company. Taylor was too young to join. I was devastated, Swift says. But some months later, at Swift's 18th birthday party, she saw Chesney's promoter. He handed her a card from Chesney that read, as Swift recalls, "I'm sorry that you couldn't come on the tour, so I wanted to make it up to you." With the note was a check. "It was for more money than I'd ever seen in my life," Swift says. "I was able to pay my band bonuses. I was able to pay for my tour buses. I was able to fuel my dreams." Listening to Swift share this on a clear fall afternoon in her New York City apartment, I am struck by how satisfying the story is. There are high stakes at the outset. There are details, vivid and sensory. There's a twist that flips the action on its head. And there's a happy ending for its hero. It takes her only about 30 seconds to recount this, but those 30 seconds contain an entire narrative world. Moving to TV shows, these are reviews by Judy Berman, and then to movies with reviews by Stephanie Zakarik. 10 of each. First of all, TV shows by Berman. 1. Succession and Reservation Dogs. Tie. This was the rare year when two series, brilliantly in their own ways, fulfilled the potential of television. HBO's Succession, an Emmy-winning drama that drove water-cooler conversation, was the obvious choice. Creator Jesse Armstrong and his virtuosic cast did not waste a second of the show's final arc, which unfolded largely in the aftermath of media mogul Logan Roy's, Brian Cox, ingeniously executed mid-air death. Every episode earned the fanfare that greeted it: Swedish Tech, Edgelord, Lucas Mattsson, Alexander Skarsgård, waging psychological warfare on the Roy kids in Norway. The White Knuckle election episode, that tour de force funeral episode. The bangers just kept coming, and the finale was the biggest bang of all, ending a race to the bottom that everyone, especially the broken Roy siblings, won. FX's Reservation Dogs, by contrast, never chased the zeitgeist. Sterling Hario's dramedy chronicled the hijinks of outsiders, Native American teens on a reservation mourning a friend who died by suicide. Profane, poignant, at times psychedelic, the series moved fluidly between adolescent awkwardness, small-town character comedy, indigenous spirituality, and the righteous anger of the disenfranchised. While the teenage res dogs remained at the show's center, its circle kept expanding until it encompassed the entire community, young and old, living and spectral. Yet the shows had plenty in common. Both were irreverent. Both mixed poetically foul-mouthed comedy and tragedy. Both had profound things to say about the socio-political realities of our time, insights they accessed through finely wrought characters unique to their worlds, lonely masters of the universe in one case, members of a disadvantaged but fiercely loving community in the other. Together, they capture the polarized extremes of American life in the year that was. So those were numbers 1 and 2, because it was a tie. Number 3, I Am a Virgo. The streaming arm of a megacorp led by one of the world's richest people kicked off 2023's hot labor summer with this flagrantly anti-capitalist comedy from radical rapper and Sorry to Bother You filmmaker Boots Riley. His surreal allegory cast Gerald Jerome as Cootie, a 13-foot-tall teen folk hero for our times, and a gentle giant who must learn that powerful forces within American society will always see a strong black man as a thug and a threat. Riley's secret weapons are humor and humanism. His message may be militant, but he delivers it in a package cushioned by laughs, love, and a lively vision of liberation. Amazon. for Rain Dogs, an intimate portrait of a fascinatingly unconventional family. Rain Dogs follows a peep show dancer and aspiring writer, Daisy Mae Cooper, struggling to support her tween daughter, Fleur Tashian, with dubious help from her recently incarcerated gay best friend, Jack Farthing. He comes from a posh family. She can rarely make rent. He's a sadist. She has masochistic tendencies. They're toxic together, and they know it, but they cannot stand to be apart. Creator Cash Carraway strikes the perfect balance of grit, warmth, and scathing British humor, ensuring this dramedy neither trivializes its character's pain nor devolves into a pity party. HBO. Number 5, Beef. And there is no description for Beef. So moving on to number 6, The Curse. Nathan Fielder follows last year's brain-breaking The Rehearsal by teaming up with Benny Safdie and Emma Stone for a scripted series that burrows even deeper into the fraught relationships between reality TV and reality. In dissecting the interactions of a couple shooting an eco-conscious real estate series for HGTV, Fielder and co-creator Safdie touch third-rail issues like gentrification, cultural appropriation, and colonialism. The precision with which each episode provokes and unsettles echoes such masters of productive discomfort as Hitchcock and Kafka. Showtime. 7, Telemarketers. True crime docuseries are more numerous but also more formulaic than ever. Telemarketers is different. Drawing on wild footage he shot of fellow employees cutting up at the Anything Goes offices of a notorious telemarketing company, co-director Sam Lipman-Stern embarks on a quest to expose an industry that is even shadier than it seems. While the series' mood is light, the investigation could not be more serious. With former co-worker Patrick J. Pespis as citizen journalist and moral beacon, Lipman-Stern unravels a web of amoral entrepreneurs, corrupt police organizations, and government cowardice. HBO. 8. Dead Ringers. The year's most unlikely reboot was also its most inspired. In repurposing David Cronenberg's 1988 horror movie about twin OBGYNs torn asunder when one falls for a glamorous patient, creator Alice Birch entrusted the brilliant Rachel Weisz with the dual role originated by Jeremy Irons. No shallow gender flip. The adjustment endowed the allegory with new layers of meaning. This Dead Ringers meets a moment when women's bodies are a battleground. A humane birth experience becomes a luxury item, and the ghosts of brutal reproductive research past cast dark shadows over the high-tech obstetrics of the present. Amazon. Number 9, The Other Two. The Other Two premiered with a narrow premise. A teen finds overnight fame as a Justin Bieber clone, and his underachieving adult siblings ride his coattails. But it evolved into a sharp, consistently hilarious satire of the entertainment industry at large. Matriarch Pat, Molly Shannon, became a window into the cult of the daytime talk show queen. Eldest son Carrie, Drew Tarver, exemplified the humiliations of the D-list actor and would-be gay icon. And sister Brooke, Helene York, learned to swim in shark-infested boardrooms. The show's third and final season was the biggest and smartest of all, capturing the demented ambition, streaming fatigue, and fickle politics that define contemporary Hollywood. Max. Number 10, Poker Face. Natasha Lyonne stars as a rumpled citizen detective in a Columbo homage created by Rian Johnson. The show could have been made on autopilot and still charmed viewers. Instead, we got 10 episodes of Case of the Week magic that sent Leon's human polygraph on a cross-country road trip, pausing to solve murders at barbecue joints, retirement communities, and more. Each stop was its own social world, populated by delightful guest stars, Chloe Sevigny, Nick Nolte, Hong Chau. And before the mysteries could get too cozy, Johnson upped the stakes and challenged Leon's wabi-sabi sage persona, setting up a second season that is bound to surprise. Peacock. Turning the page now to Sevigny Zakharik's movie reviews. Another 10. I may not have room for all of them in the time. Number 1, Fallen Leaves. A tentative romance between a woman who's making the best of dreary workaday life, Alma Poisty, and a metal worker whose perpetual drunkenness keeps him underemployed, Jussi Vatanen, plus a dog who helps his human bridge the expanse between loneliness and the contentment of solitude. Those are the main ingredients of Finnish filmmaker Aki Kaurismäki's Fallen Leaves, and he works magic with them. Kaurismäki is the master of the deadpan humanist comedy, the type of picture people may think of as merely odd or charming, yet so much of life is made up of little revelations that form the core of who we are. This is Kaurismäki's gift, to catch those moments, seemingly snatching them from the wind, and put them on screen so we too will know them when we see them. 2, Maestro. Pledging our life to another person is not for the faint of heart. Bradley Cooper's Maestro, less a biopic than a window into a complex, passionate marriage, is a modern rarity. An example of a starry, big-ticket production put to use in telling a truly grown-up story. Cooper stars as conductor and composer Leonard Bernstein, complicated and charismatic as both an artist and a man. Carey Mulligan gives one of the finest performances of the year, a portrait of both steeliness and human fragility, as the Costa Rican-Chilean actor Felicia Montalegre, who became Bernstein's wife and the mother of his 3 children. This is grand-scale filmmaking that's also bracingly intimate. 3, The Zone of Interest. The everyday things many of us want and need, plenty of food, marital companionship, a safe and comfortable home, are the same things German SS officer Rudolf Hirsch, the longtime commandant of Auschwitz, and his wife Hedwig wanted for themselves and their family. In Jonathan Glazer's ghostly, ice-cold film, adapted from Martin Amis's 2014 novel, Sandra Hüller plays Hedwig, who runs her household with starched linen efficiency, vaguely cognizant of the horrors being perpetrated beyond her garden walls, but viewing them as an annoyance rather than an atrocity. Christian Friedel's Hirsch is highly inventive when it comes to pleasing the higher-ups. His ideas are a fuel for the evil. The Zone of Interest is not just a semi-fictionalized view of history. It is also a story for the here and now, a reminder that happiness built on the suffering of others is no kind of happiness at all. 4, Priscilla. Elvis is everywhere, even 46 years after his death. But what about Priscilla Beaulieu Presley, the woman he met when he was a 24-year-old soldier stationed in Germany, and she was just a girl of 14. Sofia Coppola's film, adapted from Priscilla Presley's 1985 memoir, brings this story to the screen with infinite tenderness. Jacob Elordi plays Elvis, a great artist and a messed-up man who mistreated the woman he loved most. But the movie belongs to Kaylee Spaney as Priscilla, preternaturally self-possessed as a young teenager, but both wiser and more resilient by age 27 when her marriage to royalty ended. Spaney walks us through this extraordinary but also painful span of time in one woman's life, one satin slipper step after another. 5. Revoir Paris. The brother of French writer-director Alice Winokur survived the 2015 terrorist attack at the Bataclan Concert Hall in Paris. Unable to communicate with him as he hid, she had to wait to hear if he had survived. In Revoir Paris, Virginia Efira gives a shattering performance as a woman who survives a similar but fictional attack, though the meaning of survival here is complex. Efira's Mia remembers little of the traumatic event, but over time she finds her way back to life and to feeling by connecting with others whose lives were also broken by the tragedy. Without preciousness or platitudes, Winokur and Efira plumb the stark and sometimes painful truth of what it means to commit to the world of the living. 6. Past Lives, and writer-director Celine Song's stirring debut film, a Korean immigrant who's built a life for herself in Toronto and New York, Greta Lee, reconnects with the childhood friend she left behind years ago, Tao Yu. Her husband, John Magaro, stands by, a witness to the subterranean crackle of their connection. In any life, there are an infinite number of roads not taken. We can be on only one road at a time. Song's movie is all about the mournful beauty of missed opportunities, a recognition of the truth that yearning is part of life. Without it, all we are left with is false certainty, perhaps the greatest dishonesty of all. 7 is Killers of the Flower Moon, with no review printed. 8, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Movies dealing with the specifics of women's experience are still a relative rarity on the movie landscape. How many studio execs are going to leap at the chance to finance a film about the onset of menses and, by suggestion, its lunar twin, menopause? Featuring a superb cast, including Rachel McAdams, Benny Softy, and Abby Ryder Fortson, Kelly Freeman Craig's adaptation of Judy Blume's 1970 coming-of-age classic is largely about the confusion of adolescence, but also, more subtly, it addresses what it means for women to say goodbye to all that as they hit middle age. This is a great movie for young people, but maybe even a better one for those who find themselves looking through the far end of the telescope. 9, Dreamin' Wild. There are two types of people in the world, those who view rock and roll dreams as small things you eventually grow out of, and those who never stop living them, even if they confine their dream time to the spiral grooves of sides A and B. Bill Pollard's Dreamin' Wild, based on real-life events and starring Casey Affleck and Walton Goggins, is for the second group, a story about what happens when two people who sought pop stardom as teenagers get a second chance in middle age. Music can mean a lot in one lifetime. It can break dreams, but it can also mend them. And 10, Passages. It is impossible to get through life without messing a few things up. But how much messing up is too much? At the center of Ira Sack's sometimes funny but also piercing Passages is a self-centered filmmaker, played in a dazzling performance by Franz Rogowski, who windmills through life with reckless disregard for the feelings of those around him, including his husband, Ben Whishaw, and the young woman who has temporarily entranced him, Adele Exarchopoulos. At best, he is exasperating. At worst, he inflicts deep and lasting pain. And still, you feel something for him. His electricity is also his curse. And as this love triangle unfolds, it may leave you feeling the charge and the anguish all at once. Within the very lengthy Taylor Swift article that I abridged, there are more more of a graph set up here in two pages, and I'll read just a couple of inserts. The music. Swift has a reputation as a perennial chart topper. Her second album reached number one on the Billboard 200. So did every album since. First week sales are illustrated by the chart, with each star representing a Billboard Hot 100 top 10 hit song from that album. And there are like 12 or 13, and that was from 2006 to 2023, where she now has 1.653 million. She has 7 Grammy Song of the Year nominations, the most for any artist in history. 34.2 million is the number of times X users have viewed a tweet that said Swift ate a piece of chicken with seemingly ranch. That's what it says. Swift was the top streaming artist on both Apple Music and Spotify in 2023. She saw 65 songs reach Apple Music's Global Daily Top 100 in the first 10 months of the year. On Spotify, she had more than 26.1 billion total streams. We have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Patricia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com or call 919-875-8889. Time Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.